I'm Tanya Thompson, creator and executive producer of Nightlight, a horror podcast featuring creepy tales from Black writers all over the world. This week, we have two episodes for you. First up is a flash fiction story that reminds me so much of a creepy experience from my childhood, I knew we had to have it on the show. It's such an authentic tale, and I couldn't wait to share it with you all. And make sure you stay tuned for our full-length story coming up after that. You don't want to miss that tale of murder and mayhem. But before we get to our stories, I want to thank our patrons. Nightlight is funded 100% by our listeners, and it would not exist without your support. You can join the Nightlight Legion by going to patreon.com/nightlightpod, or you can make a one-time donation on PayPal, going to paypal.me/nightlightpodcast. Thanks to those of you who've left reviews or talked about us to your friends online and offline. We were featured in the Austin Chronicle and Book Riot as must-listen-to podcasts, so thank you for helping us spread the word. Now, sit back, turn out the lights, and enjoy D is for Dancing by Ricky Rivers Jr., narrated by Sheree Stewart.
Mama and I were sitting in the living room. I was on the floor and she was in her chair looking out the window. I was hot. Summertime and the cicadas were singing. It was peaceful, the kind of peace you don't appreciate until you're older. At some point, Mama spoke to herself. She said, "I wonder where he's going." I left my toys behind and joined her at the window. There was a man walking on the dirt road towards the house. He wasn't close but recognizable enough to see a build without facial features.
"Who's that, Mama?"
I said.
"That's Mr. Mason," she said.
I remembered him. He was always a nice man. Mr. Mason used to help Mama outside with the vegetables. Mama always said he had a strong back and kind eyes. I didn't understand why he had stopped coming around. He and Mama seemed to get along well enough. I liked him too. He used to sing little songs while he worked. I went to the front door to greet him, but Mama stopped me.
"Don't you move," said Mama.
I stopped. My hand was maybe an inch from the doorknob. I was dressed. I had on shoes. So what was wrong?
"Strange," said Mama. "How very strange."
She was talking to herself again with that serious look on her face. Meanwhile, Mr. Mason was getting closer and closer to the house. I went back to her and then once again looked outside. Mr. Mason was dancing now. A funny kind of dance. Back and forth in our direction. Saunter-like and smooth. He seemed so light on his feet. The dance made me smile. I wanted to join him. He looked like he was having so much fun.
"Mama," I said, "can I dance with him?"
Mama didn't say anything. She kept her eyes on him. Her nostrils flared and sweat trickled down her neck. Mr. Mason continued to dance and move in silent rhythm towards the house, his dark suit moving in the breeze, his white shirt bright in the sun. He reminded me of a marionette. He was always as thin as one.
"Very strange indeed," said Mama.
"What's so strange?"
I asked. Mr. Mason had almost reached our front porch when Mama stood up and went to the front door. She snatched it open and stood in the doorway.
"Go back," she yelled. "We don't want any trouble."
I stood there, staring at her. She was always so nice to him before, and he was always so nice to the both of us. So why was she yelling at him now? She only yelled when she was angry. And she couldn't be angry with him. He hadn't been around in a while. I thought to myself, maybe that's why she's mad. Because he stopped coming around? Still, she continued.
"Mr. Mason, you are not welcome here."
Her voice was shaky. She didn't sound like herself. It scared me. Mr. Mason didn't deserve to be screamed at, regardless. Slowly but surely, I saw him stop, turn, and dance away from us. Now he moved in a kind of sad manner. I felt bad for him.
"Mama," I said, "that was rude."
She didn't say anything. She just shut the door, went back to her chair, and sat back down. She wiped her sweat and kept her eyes outside. At some point, she began to hum to herself. An old gospel song. She had always done this when she got upset. She said it calmed her nerves.
"I wanted to dance with him," I said.
But Mama just hummed, her eyes remaining outside. It was like she wasn't there. Finally, I said,
I never knew Mr. Mason could dance like that. Mama looked at me and laughed.
Oh, he was always a good dancer.
A good singer, too, I said.
Yeah, said Mama. I would have let you go out there, too, if he was still alive.
I felt a funny feeling inside, like my heart was bouncing around my stomach. I swear the cicadas went quiet and hid inside me.
I stood there, looking at Mama, then asked if I could go on the porch. My head felt heavy. She said yes, but not to follow him. I went out. I didn't follow him, but my eyes did. Mr. Mason was like midnight in broad daylight. A man-shaped dot becoming smaller and smaller, dancing all the way back to his grave.
I don't know about you all, but I love a good ghost story. Now for our second story, which tells us why we should never take a deserted road to work when it's still dark out, and why we should always listen to our mothers. Sit back, keep those lights off, and enjoy Roadside Assistance by Christopher Brown, narrated by Josh Carter.
Sergio is going to be pissed. That was the first thought Henry had as he squatted down to investigate the cause of his suddenly blown out tire. He fished in his pocket for his phone, pressed the flashlight feature, and shined the light on the flattened tire. It was the middle of winter, so the sky was pitch black, rather than the bruised blue of summer skies. Fog swirled around his ankles, and Henry's breath coalesced in front of his face. He tightened his scarf around his face, wishing he'd listened to his ma. "You're gonna catch a cold," she'd said, stirring a wooden spoon into the pot of grits she was making. "Put on a damn jacket." "I don't need a jacket, ma," Henry replied. "Besides, Sergio says the cold air is good for me." His ma had rolled her eyes. "You're the only black boy I know working on a farm. You should be with me at the hospital." Henry had shot his ma a grin. "Animals are much better than people, ma. You know that." He snatched his toast from the toaster, kissed his ma on the cheek, and headed out the door. One moment, he was coasting up along the mountainside to get to Sergio's farm, and the next, he was pulled over to the side of the road. Henry didn't see a thing. "Maybe I hit a nail or something." He shone the flashlight all along the stretch of road, but saw nothing out of the ordinary. Just gravel. Henry cussed and went around the back of the car. Last he'd checked, there was a spare tire in the trunk. He popped open the trunk, but all that there were trash bags full of clothes he had meant to donate months ago. "Damn it," he said. He swiped open his phone and went through his call list. He selected Sergio's name and pressed the phone to his ear. Unfortunately, the phone went straight to voicemail. Henry kicked the flat tire angrily. He didn't have the money for a tow. He looked out over the guardrail. Below, he could just make out the faintest glimmer of glass and metal. The necropolis of cars always frightened him whenever he saw it. It was one of the many reasons Ma hated that he had to go to the top of the mountain to get to work. Worse so, that he had to drive up the mountain at the darkest time of the morning. Just then, a pair of blue halogen lights slashed through the darkness. The car they belonged to coming down the mountain fast. Not enough for Henry to draw the driver's attention, but enough that Henry pressed himself as close as he dared against the thin guardrail. He wondered briefly whether this incoming car would join the pile of smashed automobiles far beneath him. The guy had to be going 60 miles an hour at least. Henry figured the driver must have been from out of town, or maybe the guy was just reckless. Henry looked again through his phone, dropping down to Lauren's number. She wouldn't be up just yet. It was only 4:30, but he knew she had her internship today at the radio station. "Maybe I should call Ma instead," he thought, not wanting to bother his best friend so early in the day. "You've gotten her out of plenty of scrapes," a voice at the back of his head reminded him. "It's okay to call her." Reluctantly, with desperation crawling up his throat, he selected her name. It rang once, twice, three times before she answered groggily. "Hen," she started exhaustedly. "It is 4:32 a.m. This better be important." "I hate that nickname," Henry said. "That's my reason for constantly reminding you of it," Lauren replied. He heard a shuffling noise over the phone. She must have been shifting to sit upright because her voice sounded clearer when she asked, "What's wrong?" "Got a flat tire," Henry said. "Sergio's phone is off, and I need a lift." A sigh. "I'd love to help you out, Hen," But you know I have my internship today. I get to interview someone on the actual radio. Besides, I told you that working all the way up the mountain was a bad idea. Henry rolled his eyes, but couldn't help but smile. Good for you, Lauren. Why don't you just try driving it up the mountain? It may be flat, but you can still drive on it. Right. Thanks, Lauren. Good luck today. Later, dude. She ended the call. Henry slammed his trunk closed, checked his tire once more, and got into his car. He let out a nervous breath as he shifted the car into drive and eased up the mountain path. It was slow going, and he hated how the rubber tire sounded against the gravelly road. Henry's car was inching up the road when it suddenly shuddered, halting its upward momentum. Without warning, the car shot backwards violently. He tried to steer clear of the guardrail. He did not want to be one of the victims of the graveyard when his car veered towards the other side of the road. Henry threw on the emergency brake, the move so sudden that his car swerved into the mountain itself, and he bucked forward in his seat, head smashing into the steering wheel. Oh, he moaned. He went to wipe his head, and his fingers came away bloody. He strained to keep his eyes open. Ma always said that head injuries were dangerous, and that he should try and stay awake if possible. As his eyes drifted closed, he saw another vehicle approaching. Faintly heard a door slamming, and someone in a baseball cap sprinting towards him and his car. Then, blackness took him. The radio was playing country music, and he heard the sound of hands drumming against the steering wheel.
"You're awake," an unfamiliar voice said. "Wasn't thinking you'd ever open your eyes."
Henry started awake, shrinking back against the passenger door. "Who the hell are you?" he asked, taking in his surroundings. He was in the cab of a huge truck. The man next to him was dressed in faded blue jeans and a flannel. He had a Dodgers cap on his head, beat up and a little worn.
"Name's Jeb. Saw you crash as I was coming down the mountain. Bandaged you up, but be careful with that head injury."
Jeb nodded in his direction.
"I'd shake your hand, but I'm a little busy at the moment. Both hands on the wheel and all."
Jeb laughed. It sounded raspy, like he didn't laugh often. Henry moved his hand to touch his forehead, gingerly feeling along the bandages there. "Thanks," he said. "I'm Henry. Where are you taking me?"
"I'm a mechanic," Jeb said, like that explained why Henry was in his truck and coasting down the mountain. "Tried to open up your phone and call someone for you, but it's password protected. Never did like these fancy new cell phones. I prefer flip phones myself."
Henry patted his pockets, making sure his phone was still on him.
"You mind if I call a couple people?"
He waved the phone at Jeb.
"Go right ahead," the trucker said, turning the volume down on the radio.
Henry smiled thankfully and dialed Sergio. The phone went straight to voicemail again. He hoped the farmer was all right. Next, he dialed Lauren, but her phone was off too. He left a voicemail for her, explaining the situation and wished her luck with the interview. He wouldn't dial Ma. She was probably at the hospital by now. "No one's answering their phones today, apparently," Henry said.
"You could try again when we get to my shop. That's one hell of a flat tire you got there, Hen. Your back bumper is also messed up, along with the side of your car."
Henry paused at the use of the childhood nickname, but ignored it. He wasn't going to complain to the man that saved him. He looked back to see the extent of the damage, but his view was obscured by trash bags that blew faintly in the wind. The sunlight reflected off something pale and bleached white. "What's in the bags?" he asked, trying to slow the sudden quickness of his heart. Whatever he had seen reminded him of the stark whiteness of bones. Jeb glanced into the rearview mirror.
"Dead deer,"
he explained.
"I make jerky, sell it at the farmer's market on the weekends. Bring in a little extra money, and people really enjoy them."
Without asking, Jeb popped open the glove compartment. Henry took note of the scars along the trucker's hands. Jeb reached into the glove compartment and pulled out a baggie of what Henry assumed was deer jerky.
"This one is honey flavored,"
Jeb said, spilling the bag's contents into Henry's lap.
"Go on, try some."
Not wanting to offend the man, Henry took a piece and bit into it. It was a little tough, but it was pretty good. "Not bad," he told Jeb. He didn't touch the rest of the jerky. Jeb kept the radio low, and the silence seemed to be building up in the cab of the truck. Henry tried to busy himself by looking out the window, trying to calm the bundle of nerves in his stomach and ignore the fact that his hands were starting to get sweaty. Apprehension curdled in his gut. He grabbed his phone and shot a text to Ma. "Got into a bit of an accident. I'm a little banged up,
but the car is worse off than I am. He watched the message send, waited a few moments for a reply. When there was none, Henry shoved his phone into his pocket. The silence was growing uncomfortable. Finally, Henry asked, "Where'd you learn to bandage head injuries?"
"Brief stint in medical school," Jeb replied.
"My mom's a nurse," Henry said, glad to find themselves on common ground at last. "She wants me to get a job at the hospital, but I majored in animal husbandry and I work on a farm."
"Wait, did he say brief stint?"
He cheated a glance at the old trucker.
"I dropped out to pursue a baseball career. Wanted to get to the big leagues."
Jeb doffed his Dodgers cap at Henry.
"Figured I could help this sorry lot out," he explained. "Ever since they got drafted to Los Angeles, they've been garbage. Absolute garbage."
He punctuated the word absolute angrily.
"You like baseball, Hen?"
"Not really," Henry replied slowly, rubbing his hands apprehensively on his jeans. "I think it's boring."
"Play any sports?"
Jeb's hands had stopped drumming against the wheel, and now they were tight and turning white-knuckled. "No," Henry said.
"Huh."
Jeb scratched at the wisp of scraggly beard along his chin.
"Shame."
Henry said nothing. "You know," he began, "I don't need you to fix my car. I appreciate it, but if you could just drop me off at the hospital..."
"Oh, it's not a problem, Hen," Jeb assured him. "Besides, we're here."
"Oh." Henry looked at the lot. Jeb's auto shop was painted in a startling white and had the words "Jeb's Auto Restoration" in bright yellow letters across the top. There were a few broken down cars in the lot and a large shed that had a padlock on it. "Nice place," said Henry, noncommittally.
"Do you mind helping me with those trash bags in the back, Hen? I want to get them in the freezer so the carcasses don't go bad."
Jeb was already getting out of the car and heading around the back to retrieve one of the bags. Henry moved to follow. When he opened the door of the cab, his vision tunneled and he almost vomited. He recalled Ma saying something about head injuries and vertigo. He waited for the dizzy spell to pass before climbing out of the truck. Henry went around the back and went to grab a trash bag.
"Heavier than they look," Jeb warned. "Be careful, you hear?"
He had two bags slung over his back. Jeb didn't look that strong. In fact, Henry thought the man was on the leaner side, but he was more muscular than Henry assumed. Henry grabbed a bag and hefted it over his shoulder. Something hard stabbed him in the back and he cursed.
"I got a few bucks in there too. I used the antlers and stew,"
Jeb said, hearing him swear. "Cool," Henry said. They headed towards the padlock shed. Jeb produced a key from his pocket and unlocked the door. He pushed it open and headed inside. The first thing Henry noticed was the large table pushed up against the wall. There were large red stains all over it. Above the table, hanging from the wall, was an array of gleaming and glinting blades. They looked like surgical tools. Henry glimpsed a serrated saw and a few machetes, one of which still had old blood on the blade. At the far end of the shed was a freezer.
"This where you make the deer jerky?" Henry asked, incredulous.
"Mm-hmm,"
Jeb said, setting down his trash bags by the table.
"I'm usually at the shop anyway, so I do this while I wait for customers. Anyway, just put these bags in the freezer, okay? I'll go look at your car and see what I can do."
"Thanks," Henry said, and then a thought occurred to him. "Wait, how much do I owe you?" Jeb waved, dismissing Henry's question.
"This one is on the house, Hen. Just make sure you tell your friends about me."
Henry smiled and nodded as the old trucker left the shed. His phone buzzed in his pocket. He fished it out and saw he had a message from his ma.
"Are you okay? I can leave work now and come get you."
Henry's fingers flew across the on-screen keyboard.
"Someone picked me up. A good Samaritan. He's a mechanic. He's gonna help me fix up the car." "How much?"
"None. He's doing it for free."
"Nothing is free, Hen. You know that. Be careful. Love ya."
"Love you too." Henry returned the phone to his pocket and hefted up one of the bags. He proceeded to the freezer. It took him a bit to open the freezer itself. The door was heavy, and he had to strain harder than what he deemed necessary to budge the door. Guess Jeb wants to make sure the deer are really being preserved properly. Some sort of ventilation system was breathing cold air into the freezer, and all the walls were lined with bags. Henry set the bag down and went to grab the other bags. The one from before kept poking him in the side as he dragged it along the floor. Fed up, he opened up the bag and froze. He was looking down at a long, pale arm with gleaming red fingernails. He staggered away from the bag with a cry of alarm. Maybe his head injury was playing tricks on him. Maybe he did need to get to the hospital. He could just ask Jeb to drop him off. Henry shook his head, trying to clear his muddled thoughts. "I'm just seeing things," Henry told himself. "Ma did say that head injuries can lead to seeing things. That's all this is." But when he looked into the trash bag again, the severed arm was still there, cleanly cut with surgical precision. Henry thought back to his conversation with Jeb in the car. "Brief stint in medical school. I got a few bucks in there, too. I use the antlers in stews. I make jerky." Henry felt warm all over, like he had just taken a shot of whiskey. His apprehension returned full force, and his palms were slick with nervous sweat. Bile rose up in his throat like a dam threatening to burst, and he vomited, coughing and sputtering until he was dry heaving. Every ragged breath tore out of him, burning his throat. He had to get out, had to get away without Jeb being suspicious. He heard the door to the shed swing open, heard Jeb's footfalls as his heavy boots tapped against the floor.
"Hen, your tire is replaced, so the car is drivable, but..."
He stopped short, must have noticed the open bag or smelled the stench of sick. Whatever it was, it didn't matter.
"Damn it, Hen,"
Jeb said softly. The nickname sounded odd to Henry's ears now.
"You weren't supposed to see that."
There was a metallic rasping sound, and Henry guessed that Jeb had just taken one of those blood-covered knives down from the wall. He couldn't not face Jeb. When Henry turned, the old mechanic had his sleeves pulled up. There were even more scars all along his arms. Jeb noticed him staring.
"I've been killing for years, Hen. You're just one in a long list."
The machete Jeb held glinted in the light. There was still blood on the blade, and Henry wondered just how fresh that blood was. Henry didn't know which startled him more, the loss of Jeb's accent or his dark confession. He wished he had listened to his ma.
"Nothing is free, Hen."
He should have just called her, should have taken that job in the hospital. He should have done a lot of things. For a moment, Henry saw a flash of something in Jeb's eyes. Regret? Despair? He couldn't recognize the look, but Jeb lowered his Dodger's cap over his eyes and the moment passed.
"You don't have to do this," Henry rasped, voice still hoarse from vomiting.
Jeb was already coming forward and Henry backpedaled. He tripped over the bag of body parts and almost hit his head again, but caught himself. He rolled out of the way in time to avoid the arc of Jeb's blade. It sliced open one of the mini trash bags and spare body parts disgorged themselves. A leg, a hand, an eye. Henry wanted to throw up again, but he swallowed the bile that was threatening to worm its way up and out of his esophagus. Jeb was backing him further into the freezer. If he wanted, he could have left Henry to freeze. It would have been the simpler choice. The easier choice. Henry peered over Jeb's shoulder. The freezer wasn't that large, and there was still the gleaming assortment of sharp objects hanging above Jeb's butcher table. He cheated a glance at Jeb. The trucker was old, yes, but something about the way he moved belied strength and agility that did not match up with his elderly appearance. But Henry had been baling hay and other laborious tasks for Sergio for years now. He may not have been as fast as Jeb, but he was certainly stronger. Jeb came up at him with the bloody knife again, and Henry dodged out of the way. He shoved the old trucker aside and bolted out of the freezer. He tried to slam the freezer door closed, but Jeb was too fast, already charging toward the door faster than Henry would have thought. Instead, he made a mad dash towards the butchering table, snatched one of the other machetes off the wall. Despite its smallness, the blade felt heavy in his hand, felt awkward clenched in his large fist. When Jeb emerged from the freezer, his eyebrows knitted together in surprise.
"I didn't take you for the type, Hen."
"The type?" Henry's brain worked furiously. How many others had fought and died here? How many had fought and lived? Henry wasn't sure he wanted to know the answer, and Jeb was advancing too quickly for his liking. This time, Henry didn't run. Not immediately. He clenched his eyes shut, swinging blindly at the old trucker. He heard Jeb swear as the blade snagged on something, and then a loud rip of clothing as he drew the machete back.
"If you're going to swing at someone," Jeb said, glancing in his now ripped flannel, "make sure you kill them."
Jeb moved, fast. Henry backed away, thrusting the machete out at the same time. There was a gasp. No, a choke, thought Henry. and for the third time that day, he had to swallow the acid and sick that had risen up in his throat. The hilt of the machete was protruding from Jeb's gut. It did not belong there, in the way that the bodies in the freezer did not belong there. Jeb coughed up blood. It stained his teeth and tongue, making the old trucker look even more monstrous.
I guess you were the type.
The coughing turned into hacking, and blood splattered the floor and splashed Henry's shoes. Henry stepped back, realizing he was the only thing keeping Jeb from crashing to the floor. Jeb pitched forward and didn't bother to catch himself. Henry wasn't sure if he had the strength to do so. The machete buried itself further into Jeb's stomach, and Henry could see that the blade was jutting from his back, wet with fresh blood. Henry was rooted to the spot. He knew he should dial 911. He knew he should text Lorne or call Ma, let them know he was all right. He should call Sergio. The man had been in his fair share of trouble. But he couldn't move, couldn't even will his fingers to reach for his phone. He just watched, fascinated, as Jeb bled out on the floor, ruining his shoes, turning the cuffs of his long jeans from faded blue to a bright red. Move, he urged. Move, move, move. He headed towards the shed door, throwing a single glance back at Jeb. The trucker was unmoving, lying in a pool of his own congealing blood. He wasn't going anywhere. The air was wintry and biting. He closed the door behind him and made his way toward the three garage doors he and Jeb had passed on the way in. His car was in the garage to the far left. The remaining three tires were slashed. Jeb was not going to help him after all. Why bother unhitching the car? Henry wondered. Did Jeb want him to find those bodies? And furthermore, to end Jeb's serial murdering spree? Does it even matter?
I've been killing for years, Hen. You're just one in a long list.
Henry shook his head free of those thoughts and approached Jeb's truck. The truck was off, but the key was still in the ignition and it was warm to the touch. He could leave. He should leave. His conscience was telling him different. Henry turned back to the shed. He couldn't leave, not without doing something about Jeb's body. Henry fished his phone from his pocket, but his hand froze in front of the dial button.
You're the only black boy I know working on a farm.
Ma's voice drifted through his head. Well, he'd seen it, hadn't he? He'd watched the news. He'd read all the horror stories. Situations like this didn't turn out well for men like him. No one would suspect Jeb of being the killer in this particular encounter. All fingers would point to Henry, and none would be the wiser for it. He slipped the phone back into his pocket. He pushed the door to the shed open gingerly, as if he were afraid Jeb would reawaken if he made too much noise. This wasn't like the movies, where the notorious villain would suddenly get up and vanish. Henry kept telling himself that as he headed into the shed. Jeb's body remained. The blood around him had completely congealed. The freezer was still standing wide open. The cold air emanating from it caused the temperature of the shed to drop slightly, enough to give Henry goosebumps. Henry rolled Jeb's body over, being careful not to touch the blade that was lodged in the trucker's gut. He was surprised he hadn't vomited yet, considering all the blood on his shoes. He glanced at the freezer once more as he picked Jeb up by the armpits and dragged him toward the door. He set Jeb's body down, searched the old trucker's pocket, and came up with an old flip phone. He could have sworn he saw the rise and fall of Jeb's chest, but he figured his mind had to have been playing tricks on him. The drive was surreal. Henry had propped Jeb up in the passenger seat and buckled him in. Currently, Jeb's head was turned to the right. The machete was still lodged in his gut and blood stained his shirt. He was driving to the site of the accident. It seemed like forever ago. When he checked the clock, it read 5:25. Suddenly, Jeb coughed and then wheezed, pulling in a great lung full of air. Henry nearly pulled the truck over right then and there, but he only tightened his hands on the wheel and continued driving. Jeb laughed at Henry's startled reaction and then asked,
"Where are we going?"
Henry said nothing, kept driving. Every so often he glanced to make sure that Jeb wasn't going to lunge across the small distance between them and snap his neck. Jeb leaned back in the seat, but, Henry noticed, kept his right hand near the edge of his wound, fingers touching the hilt as gingerly as possible. After a few moments, Henry slowed the truck to a stop. When he turned to look at Jeb, the trucker's eyes were closed, and his hands were in his lap, well away from the machete protruding from his stomach. The morning air was brisk and biting, and for the fourth time that day, Henry wished he had listened to his ma.
He headed around to Jeb's side of the car, intending to drag him out of the passenger side of the truck and pull him around to the driver's side. However, when he reached the other side of the vehicle, Jeb had unsuccessfully attempted to wrench the machete free from where it was lodged in his stomach. Henry noticed a thin sheen of sweat on Jeb's face. "I wouldn't risk it," Henry warned. "The blood loss would kill you faster than you could slice me with that thing." For a moment, Jeb looked around, tried to register where they were. Henry was chewing his lip furiously, mind worrying, attempting to figure out the scenario he now found himself in. Jeb's hands were shaking minutely, as if he were trying to ignore the mess of blood and gore running down his shirt and pants.
"This seems like a fitting end," said Jeb at last, looking out of the windshield and realizing where Henry had taken him.
Henry froze at that. He wasn't sure what he was supposed to say. Wasn't sure if he should say anything at all. Henry bit his tongue, decided then and there not to answer. Let Jeb have the last word. Let him think he had won. Jeb lunged forward. With his grievous wounds and the way he was positioned in the seat, Jeb wasn't fast enough to attack. Henry punched Jeb in the mouth. The trucker's head whipped to the side, and Jeb slumped against the passenger seat. Henry removed the machete from Jeb's stomach and tossed it on the floor, then grabbed Jeb and slung him over his shoulder. It was like baling hay, if that hay were a lean-muscled trucker covered in blood and gore and sick. He set Jeb down in the driver's seat and removed the laces on his boots. He tied Jeb's foot down to the gas pedal as tight as he could and then adjusted his body so that it looked like Jeb was actually driving. He placed the pickup truck in drive and watched as the truck accelerated, slammed through the guardrail, and tumbled down to join the rest of the poor souls who'd lost their lives taking the curvaceous mountain roads too fast. He didn't hear a crash, didn't hear the sound of metal crunching against sharp rocks, nor heard the rumble of a possible gas explosion. Jeb's was a quiet death. The moon scythed through the sky, the only witness to Henry's gruesome deed. Covered in blood and sick, Henry started home. His gorge didn't rise. Ma was waiting for him to come home.
Thanks again to our patrons for supporting this podcast. Without the Nightlight Legion, this podcast would not exist. Because of your support, listeners around the world get creepy stories in their ears on a regular basis. Remember, you can join the Nightlight Legion for as little as $1 per month by going to patreon.com/nightlightpod, or you can make a one-time donation by going to paypal.me/nightlightpodcast. Audio production for D is for Dancing is by Jen Zink. Audio production for Roadside Assistance by Tanya Thompson. And to thank you for listening until the very end, we have a creepy fact for you. So there's this German guy named Armin Meiwes, which I'm probably saying incorrectly, but he solicited people to eat their bodies. So basically he asked people, "Hey, can I take a body part from you and eat it?" And someone actually volunteered to allow him to do this. So this guy volunteers to allow him to eat his penis, and the guy almost dies from blood loss, but the guy didn't consent to being killed, he only consented to having his penis eaten. But since he was bleeding really badly and almost dying, this guy Armin decided that he was just going to kill him anyway, and so he strung this guy up and decided that he was going to eat his entire body. Luckily, about a year and a half later, someone reported this guy to the police because he was soliciting more victims online. And so the police come over and they search his home. They found a videotape and body parts, and he has now been convicted and has become a vegetarian. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week with another episode.